This is a Pinball News production.
Yes, I have been gone a long time, so it's been about 35 or more years since I was involved in this wonderful industry, so if I sound a little lack of memory, forgive me, it's been a while. The hair is white, and very little of it, but I'm amazed at the, not really amazed, because I know how great it is to play a pinball machine. I've been enjoying it since I was a little kid, like all of you as well. But it's kind of neat to see that it's still here. It's never going to go away, and probably will grow. All those little games that the kids play at home are not fun. They're not fun at all. They're not like a pinball game where you get your body into it and you really can feel the action on that table. Rob was nice enough to ask me to come, and we kind of termed my little discussion with you guys, my days at Ad Posters, and you know, my time was so short there, it seemed like just days at Ad Posters. But if you don't know what Ad Posters was, it was a one of the industry tangents that grew as a result of the pinball machine. It was a screen printing company that did artwork for the pinball machine industry, the coin-operated amusement game industry, which was pretty widespread even back when I started. I was about 25 or 26 years old, and before I got to Ad Posters, it was a bit of a journey just getting there. I was fresh out of college. I was an art major, which taught me very little about artwork at all, especially in the commercial end. You know, we were drawing and painting. We did life drawing. You just don't go get jobs because you can draw a model on a stand. So I had a friend, in fact, kind of let credence to the phrase, it's who you know. They happened to own Bally Manufacturing. And they said, we need some help in our art department. And I had no idea even how to do a screen print, how to create one, how to work with one. So they put me into their art department. This was at Bally. And there were three other people in my department. They were all brothers, and they'd been there for a very long time. The White brothers. You may remember the name Dick White. I was looking at our Hall of Fame here. Dick's not in it, but he might be somebody to consider because he was in this business for a long time. He did some games for Bally. Circus is one of the ones I recall him doing. Good artist, but of the sort of the 50s, 60s cartoon style. As you know, just from watching these games as they grew, that style sort of faded away, and it became a little bit more realistic as it went. But what I learned from these gentlemen, aside from knowing that I was not welcome, because the three brothers were kind of anti-establishment, I was the young kid that came in, sort of like a spy for them, and I was never liked very much by the guys, but they did teach me. The screen printing process was very involved. And in those days, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have computers. Everything was done by hand. So if you had an idea and you wanted to put it on a machine, there were a lot of steps along the way. If you did your drawing, we would do the original drawings in pen and ink in a cartoon style. So you would have this drawing that you did. Actually, I think we should step back just a little bit. Before you even got there, you had to have somebody that you were dealing with a game. We were the artists. We were just the sort of end result guys. The games were made in the manufacturing area, and one of my jobs was to get over and talk with the designer, and they would say, this game does such and such. You know, the ball spins around. We see this. We see that. It drops. Whatever. Many times, they wouldn't even have a name for the game. So you could get involved as an artist and a creative person. Well, let's call it so-and-so. That happened a little later when I was at Ad Posters. But at Bally, after they taught me how to do color separations, you may not know the screen printing process, one color at a time was actually applied to the glass or the wood or these panels, whatever it might be, the plastics. If you look at that machine, there's so many little pieces that go into it. And if you've never seen it before, it's kind of a puzzle that you have to fit together. But it was a lot of fun. That was a job. We called it a job. It was like going off to play a game every day. It was great. So once I learned that process, and we did everything for the Bally back then was making slot machines. That was their main business. So we actually drew the cherries and the sevens and whatever other little thing came up as it rolled around. You actually had to draw that thing on a piece of paper, take a photo of it. It would be on a Mylar, a clear piece of plastic. Then you would cut each color out of a little thing they called a ruby lith. You pull the ruby off, and that's where the ink would flow. It's a little boring, but it happened that way. After Bally, and remember, I was a 26-year-old man, so I had my own thoughts about things. It did not sit real well with me if I wasn't very well appreciated or welcomed by the three white brothers. I moved from that little department. They opened a new business called Carousel Time, which was a game room or amusement room builder, creator. You know, my look back on that was that I was way ahead of my time. I was coming up with rooms that were like, when I see Rainforest Cafe, for instance, if you've ever seen one of those or been to one, it's a restaurant with all these great little trees and monkeys and things that are all made out of, I don't even know what they're made out of, but you're in this environment. So that's what we were trying to do with these game rooms. Because back then, you didn't have a game in your home. You went to play a game at the amusement arcade. And so every game room I came up with, which I thought were great, nobody ever built. They were too expensive. They looked at me like it was crazy. So they rolled in red, white, and blue carpet and painted stars on the wall and then lined up the pinballs, and they still made money. A little while later, a fella came along. I don't remember his last name, but he was a Japanese man. And he was like bringing the mob leader into the room. He had all these little guys following him around, found out that he made a game called Nintendo. And that was the beginning of the end for arcades and game rooms, because they didn't need them anymore. The kids didn't have to take their quarters to the mall. They could play it at home. At any rate, Carousel Time didn't last all that long. And through a little bit of a convoluted journey, I moved up to Lake Geneva. I was waiting. I was running a restaurant, managing a restaurant in a little town called Fontana near Lake Geneva. And a man by the name of Tommy Grant was a guest that night, and he stopped me on the floor and said, "Hey, you're Bob Timm." I went, "Yeah, how do you know?" He knew me from somehow. Anyway, he offered me a job on that floor that night, saying, "Why don't you come to Chicago and help me design artwork for pinball games?" And I said, "Gee, I don't know. I kind of like living up here." He says, "Well, you don't have to move. It's only an hour or so commute." And anyway, he said, "What have you got to lose?" Which I felt like I didn't have anything to lose. I was still very young, and I wasn't making a lot of money anyway. So, and I was from the North Shore of Chicago, so it was kind of like going home. So that was advertising posters that Tommy Grant owned. And I went there and was lucky enough to work with one of our Hall of Fame people by the name of George Melenton. And George was the art director at Ad Posters. I think he had been for about 40 years or something. Nice man. He was retiring, and that was why they needed some new blood to come in, learn that business. And I had still remembered my sort of apprenticeship time at Bally, so I was a little better at the screen printing process, but there were a lot of really neat things happening at that time. One of our main customers from Ad Posters was Stern, Gottlieb. Williams and Midway were owned by Bally, so they pretty much had their own artists. But if Gottlieb and Stern had a game, they'd call Ad Posters. And that's what I was hired to do, was go over, be the liaison between their engineering department and our art department, create this stuff that we're going to make those games come to life. And it was fascinating thing. I got to work with Gary. He may not even remember me. Like I say, the time spent seemed like a few days, even though it was a few years. So one of the things that Rob wanted me to mention, because three of the games that I personally did the artwork for. Two of them are on the wall here, Ali and Seawitch. The other one is Free Fall that I'm not sure if they even... Have you ever seen one, Rob? Yeah. They probably are very rare because they didn't make all that many of them. I don't know, but it's been a long time. That was probably 35 years ago. Just the revival of some of these old games is neat to see. They still play. The Ali game, when I saw that, we thought, oh, wow, we can't miss with the great one. What we did on that one was just I got a photo of his portrait. I did not draw that, but all the other little side drawings were all done by me, and then the play field, of course, was designed. You had to see this bare board and then come up with your feeling for what's happening in that game. You know, it hits the side bumpers. Obviously, we're roping a dope or we're punching, somebody on the Frazier's down or whatever. I don't even remember how we did it, but that was the fun part. To me, it was doing the plastics and the play field because that was the action. Obviously, the back glass is the attract mode. You see all the games lined up. Kids would be attracted by whatever was in that glass, but it was really all about the game. It's not about the artwork, at least it wasn't then. The artwork is a neat thing, but the games themselves were the attraction. And you were kind of this, when we went over to the manufacturer, we were very humble. We did not act like, oh boy, our artwork is going to sell this. No, the game was the star. But it certainly helps to have a fun-looking game. You remember games like Fireball, Black Knight. These are Dave Christensen games. Dave and I knew each other pretty well back in those days. He was, kind of an innovator because of the style of work that he brought. And one of the artists that worked in my department was Gordon Morrison, who's also on our Hall of Fame, a Canadian who'd been in the business for probably 20 years before he met me. And it was kind of difficult for a young guy to come in and say, well, I got to tell Gordon Morrison how to do his artwork. Never dreamed possible. I did not do that. It's like a new manager coming in and you got a 20-game winner on your pitching staff. You don't tell the guy he's got to change his curveball. You just put him in the lineup and go. And that's what we did. Morrison was the main artist for Gottlieb. And if you remember any of his games, he did the cartoon look tremendously. Superman, Spider-Man. He showed me a lot. Just being able to work with brush and ink like he did. It was all a learning process. Seawitch was another one of the games that I did. And Seawitch, I think, if I recall correctly, I might have even named that one. That was one of the blanks that we would go back into the manufacturing area, and we'd see what how the game played. With Christensen bringing in the female form, as you would, if you look around, they're all half clothed, and Dave enjoyed that. So my little girls were kind of on that same mode. But Seawitch was a fun game to play. I actually owned one. When we moved a million times as youngsters, my wife said, we got to get rid of this pinball machine. And that was the biggest mistake I ever made. I loved the game. I played it all the time. Very proud of having been part of actually the process of creation of that. The wave effect, the play of that game with the head of the woman in there, it's great. Enjoyed doing that one. The other game that I did myself and was Free Fall. Actually, what I should say when I say it myself, we were working on games every day. We had about 10 artists in the room, our art room, and jobs would come in, and we would just try to figure out, well, this sort of lends itself to Doug's artwork, or Gordon is going to handle the Gottlieb. We did other games where just part of our staff would be commissioned to do that job. But my actual sitting down and working on a game, these are the three that I remember the most: Free Fall, Ali, and Seawitch. So rather than just talk at you all, this is a fascinating part of the process. If anybody has any questions about the creation of the artwork, I'd be happy to answer them, if I can.
Sure. So I have here the back glass for Bally Harvest, and this is an artist that our community does not know who that is. If you recognize that artist.
Let me see. Bally Harvest.
Yeah, so mid-60s, and that artist did several back glasses for Bally. And that style, if you look at the pointy chins.
That could have been Gordon Morrison.
Really?
That would have been his style, but I am not familiar with this particular game.
So that would.
Well, you know what? Bally had their own. I believe Bally would have had their own art department. I don't think Gordon was involved.
So it
could
have been one of the White Brothers, maybe?
Could have been. Now, that's actually better. Dick was not that great of an artist. This is really well done.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
That's
no, that doesn't look like Dick's style. And the other two brothers were technicians. They were the guys that did the color separations and
that's
photo
good to
work.
Have that clarified.
So, yeah, they didn't really get in there and do the drawing. Dick was the star. And that's why when I came in, they sort of resented me because my style was a little different from Dick, and it was a little more with it, I guess, if you will. And his was fading a bit. But, you know, that older style, the angular cartoon things, was still kind of neat to see those games, you know. Rob?
I'm surprised that they're not knowing the answer to that question. It had to be Jerry Kelly. He was the
angular. We have the whole list.
We're talking about Jerry Kelly.
I'm George Millett, because I asked Millett myself. I showed him glass, and he said I did not do that.
Did George actually do a lot of games? Was he actually creating the artwork? Because when I was there, he was pretty much just the liaison guy. He didn't.
Hey, Bob, how about Christian Marsh, perhaps? Christian Marsh?
Yes, that's possible. Christian Marsh worked very closely with George. He was gone by the time I'd gotten there.
He had
so
some of that angular stuff.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Those real
geometric. Here's your answer, Christian Marsh. Thanks to our English corps.
I think we need more evidence.
Yeah.
We need to get Christian Marsh here.
I do, too. I think more evidence is what you need on that. But, I don't know. There was so much that went into, when you got a blank glass, and looking at this is a good example, when the numbers would come through on the glass, you had to prepare your artwork so that light would not shine through. There was a process of a kind of a mirroring silver effect that went. It was the last screen that they would print. So lights could only light up where you wanted them to. In this case, there's numbers 1 through 10 on a pumpkin patch, and you had to create your artwork to go along with what was needed on that glass. It kind of posed a problem. That's what I said when you were sort of a puzzle to fit. Rob.
There was another oddball.
You did the back glass, and Christensen did the plate, right?
Four. Wow.
Very good. Had a Jerry Kelly look.
Yeah, very stark.
That's obviously a golf game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the name. Yeah. Dave did the play field?
Yeah.
It was interesting to watch Dave because he sort of showed a lot of us that you don't have to just cut these colors out. He never used ruby lith. It was a film of red stick'em stuff. I don't know how else to explain it. You had to use an X-Acto knife to cut these shapes out to fill the form that color was going to print. And Dave would just take his pen and ink everything in. And the photo guys, the camera guys said, oh, that just doesn't work because you could never get it opaque enough to be light, not sensitive. You couldn't make a clean cut without having some of those little sparkles come through or little lights. So the screen was not clean. And so that's why ruby lith was the way to go. But you learned how to, you could only use a few colors. And you learned how to match colors like if you used a blue and a yellow, you could also have a green because then they would cross over. We learned how to use tone sheets, little dots that could sort of create a shadowing effect on your characters or in your lettering. And speaking of lettering, that's all done by hand. Now, Ali, of course, three letters. That wasn't exactly the hardest thing in the world to do. But Sea Witch was drawn by hand. You had to use hard edge templates to do these things, and it was all that was part of the creative process. Yes, sir.
Question about the. So you were using Groovy Lift most of the time. They were never film positives, never image. Which answered my question.
Actually, film positives were used, but that's what you created from the Ruby Lift. So you would take that shot, and then they would take that as a film positive, and you know it was all matched up. The little X in the corner, you had the overlay exactly fit.
So yeah. What was the mentality when these games were originally produced? Obviously, I'm not sure everyone was thinking about the collectability 40 years later. So were those films lost? Were they archived properly, or do some of these exist somewhere?
That's really a great question. The question was, were these films and drawings archived in any way, saved in any manner? Because we didn't think of it back then as a collectible. We didn't think of it as anything but one more job that was put in the drawer. I did not keep. I tried to keep a few of my things, but over the years they just found a way out. I don't know. I wish somebody had that answer. Dave Christensen may have kept some. Bally may have kept some.
So the individuals were keeping.
Yeah.
Probably.
You know, I can't answer for everybody, but I suppose if I wanted to take some of my drawings, I could have.
Ad Posters also had a fire and it lost a lot of its files.
Yes, Ad Posters had a fire and did lose a lot of its files, and the drawers probably just couldn't keep that heat out.
Since I'm an old-timer, you know, I've seen it all, done it all, and I would say it was either 84 or darn close to it, the first expo where I went to Ad Poster, and they had a warehouse full, as far as your eyes could see, of back glasses and these screens, as far as your eye could see.
In 84, huh? 1984?
84, 85.
Wow.
So I didn't buy it. Can you guess who did in the audience? Who's the number one backglass king? Mayfair. Mayfair, it took him, I think it was either 3 or 4 semi-fulls.
Oh, no.
Of backglasses. It was current stuff, plus it was some older stuff there. I remember he had a Gottlieb Happy Clown or something, but it was on Plexi, which I thought was interesting. They had a few pieces there on Plexi. But Steve from Mayfair bought all that product. I think at the time the guy wanted either $4,000 or whatever, $6,000. And I guess when you look back at it, it was a lot of money, but it was like a dollar a glass. So it was a fair deal.
Yeah.
But who in their right minds got a place to put 6,000 glasses? And he did not buy the screens. The screens end up in the garbage.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone had the ability to rescreen this stuff, boy, if I knew that guy Bruce in Columbus, he probably could rescreen this stuff with his eyes closed. Loaded screens, wall to wall. They all had these wood frames around them. But they took up so much room, it was ridiculous.
Was Ad Posters out of business at that
point? No, they were still there.
Really?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Someone brought me a close-up picture of Stern Galaxy backglass with a signature R. Tim, T-I-M-M.
That's
would
yeah.
that be you?
That would be me. Unless somebody was dumb enough to use my name doing something. Yeah, that should be it, Galaxy.
So we added your name to that game on the Internet Pinball
yes,
database. Because
yes,
of that, because of that one close-up that
cool.
we got.
Really neat. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, Galaxy, that's mine.
What else do you have?
I don't know. I told you it was a long time ago. You know, one of the things that, yes, sir.
Thanks for coming to talk to us at Expo. I'm keen to know that when you needed faces to go on people on a back glass, say you mentioned Seawitch, for example, would you use friends and family?
No, you know what we did? We had a file, it was a tear file, tear sheets, that we would find in magazines or, you know, whatever, and it was just, oh, we got to keep going through this. And I kind of learned that from one of my artists, Doug Watson, who you may have seen some of his work, Panthera. He worked on when he was under my direction. And he had just files of these great photographs, and you could take an arm from one and a leg from another and whatever, but yeah, you didn't have models, and you know, the friends and family didn't know what you were doing. You were just off to work. But, you know, one of the interesting things that did come about while I was still in the business, one of the real innovators from an artistic standpoint besides Dave Christensen was a guy by the name of Paul Ferris, who worked with Bally. And he was the first to do four-color process. In other words, you could do a beautiful painting in oil or watercolor or just a finished drawing with all your colors on it, and it could be reproduced with this four-color process. Are you familiar with that, sir?
I am.
Yeah.
The other question I have for you, at AdPoster, I'm sure you were using solvent-based inks, solvent-cured.
Yes.
That
was while I was still there. The question was, when did you change from solvent-based inks to UV-cured inks? Ultraviolet light had to pass over the ink to make it hardened on the glass or the boards. And that was back in the 70s when they started doing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we had a young man that was hired by AdPosters. He came from the university up in New York State. Rochester, is that? Where did the Polaroid company... Yeah, he was at Rochester Institute, very smart young man, and he kind of dragged us kicking and screaming into the modern age with four-color process. But Paul Ferris was the guy who really started that thing. And then, of course...
Ferris right there.
Is that Paul? Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then he could do things like the Star Trek things or, you know, who else? What other job? Indiana Jones was all these beautiful paint. They were basically paintings, and you could put them on back glass now. So it took it out of that cartoony flat color approach, which I still like. But you know, it really gave it a different, more updated, modern look. And now we really have some fancy things on the glass. The game itself, the side panels are done with spray paint. I watched these guys do this in some of these. They just had a big, like a, you know how you paint a car in a booth? They just would have they'd have a stencil, squirt out the yellow, and it was very simple, but it was very effective, too. And that's the pinball style. That'll never change. We got another, was that the Black Knight or something?
Only me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's too high-tech for me.
Four.
So there's the sun. Okay. We're talking.
No, I didn't do that, but I was part of it. We had, I wonder who did that. We had a lady in our group, Leslie Kuiper, I think was her name. She may have worked on that one. Yeah.
They're writing it. I spell her last name.
I want to say Kuiper, Kuiper, Leslie Kuiper, and I think that was one that she might have done the color separations on. She did a game called Meteor. Do you remember Meteor? Yeah. She did that one under our auspices at AdPosters. I don't know. What else can we... interesting questions. Yes, sir.
On the games like Ollie and Galaxy, where Harry Williams was part of the design process, was he also interacting with the artists?
Not really, no. I got to meet him, but only in passing. They would have kind of a lower echelon engineers working on the games, and if I went back and saw them, I never really got to deal with Harry. He was a little above my pay scale.
Did you do like a flyer for Galaxy where they characterized him on the back?
Those were done out of house. I don't know how they did the flyers. The flyers were really neat. You know, when you got Muhammad Ali standing by the game, you know, they didn't involve us in that. That came right from the game manufacturers themselves. So Midway or Bally, Gottlieb, they would get their own, you know, source.
One quick question. I've read a lot about AdPosters over the years for yourself. What's the brief history of the company? When did it start?
The question is, when did AdPosters start? Brief history of it. You know, I can't really be too specific about that. I do know that Tom Grant, the young man who owned it when I was working, I believe his dad started the business, so it had been around probably 20 or more years. You know, Bally Manufacturing was the originator of the pinball, and they'd been doing that since, what, the early probably 20s maybe? So I was it 32? Really? So you guys are experts. I mean, I'm just here to listen. But Adposters was part of it from an early spot on because the companies that made the machines did not have the wherewithal to do the screen printing to get that artwork down. So, again, these tangents that all grew out of that wonderful business, Adposters was one of them. I don't know when their demise was. Was it in the mid-'80s? Yeah. I went from Adposters to a place in California called Willis Industries, and it was really just the same kind of a thing as Adposters, a little bit smaller, but aggressive and growing. W-I-L-L-I-S. Bob Willis was, he was the owner. We did a lot of things for replacement articles. Arcade pieces, you know, the any of them, Galaga and Donkey Kong and the little ghost thing, what was her name? Miss Pac-Man. Yeah, see, I told you it's been a while. Anyway, if somebody had those games and a part broke or cracked or something, they had to reorder them, and so we would fill those needs. We just did a lot of different things for that part of the industry. It was really a lot of fun. We could get very creative in those, too. But then, you know, Atari came along, and that's when we saw Mr. Nintendo. I don't think that was his last name, but he might just as well have been. He was Nintendo, and the writing was on the wall. Yes, sir?
Gordon Morris is well-known for high
No, I didn't. Gordon was very clever. Yeah, he was one of the funniest people you would have ever met. He's been gone a while now, but very, very good artist, great guy, and really a top dog in our part of the business. I'm glad I saw him on the Hall of Fame. But I was not wise enough to hide anything. If I did, it probably would have been off color, so I wouldn't tell anybody.
You know, the one thing I want to say about Bob is when he came to Expo, again, this is back in the 80s, no one really knew him. And I remember, you know, as a promoter of the show, seeing him sit at the autograph table and hardly anyone coming to him because there wasn't much known about him. But I'm so tickled that he agreed to be here because you can see the wealth of information and how valuable it is for him to be here today. And I'm not sure I can ever get him to come back again, but somehow I talked him into coming today.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's got such great information, such great talent. I mean, for those that are really into these steering games, they love Seawitch. I mean, I think it's a great art. And it's a chance, again, this is the reason you come to Expo, to meet these guys, because for a lot of them, once they're out of the industry, they're out of it. And for me, it's my job to talk him into coming. And then at first it's always typically no. And then why? And then maybe. And then always I'll check with my wife. It's always their
it's
escape. It's the escape route they use. They use the escape route. So then sometimes I have to go deal with the wife. I say, well, we really need him to come. And then she talks to him and he talks him into it. Anyways, he's here. He's a great guy. He gave us some great information. Ladies and gentlemen, let's thank him so much. How about it?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I'd love to do another game. I see this, and I'd love to do it again.
Thanks for having me.